Gang, whether you're sitting around a bonfire jamming out with your friends and trying to learn songs and trying to figure out what the chords are, or whether you have just been paid $100 at your gig to play a song by request by an artist, let me tell you, Ultimate Guitar is an amazing app for you. For just $2.99, you get the chords and tabs on guitar, bass, or ukulele for over a million songs. You also get tools like a tuner, metronome, and chord library, and much, much more. Go to ultimateguitar.com or download the app to your phone and start jamming today. That's ultimateguitar.com. Let's get down.
And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here? And now here is your host.
Johnny, I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I hope that you all had a great weekend, whatever it is that you were doing, and you're easing into your week. A lot of people do a lot of stuff. I do a lot of stuff during the week. I do a lot of stuff on the weekends. I mostly do skyrocket work on the weekends, do a lot of podcast stuff and music stuff, recording stuff, writing stuff, Austin Music Foundation stuff during the week. So I'm on a cycle of always doing stuff. So I don't, like, Monday doesn't register as Monday to me. You know what I mean? Like it does to some people. So I hope that you had a good weekend. That's all I'm trying to say. That's all I'm trying to say, you guys. Welcome to the show. Thank you for listening. I appreciate it. I have a great show for you guys today. Alex Dugan and Mick Vredenburg from the band Culture Wars are here. They have a brand new self-titled EP that came out in 2017 that was produced by Robert Sewell. And mixed by, they had a song mixed by Alan Mulder, song mixed by Manny Marroquin. These guys have worked with huge people. Imagine Dragons, Kanye West, real deal stuff. They recorded out at Sonic Ranch in Tornillo, Texas, a studio that's owned by my pal Tony that I've known for a long time. In fact, 18 years ago, actually that's not true, 20 years ago was the first time I went out there to see if that studio was a great place for my band Gowdy to record our debut album. It turned out that a couple of people didn't want to be out in the middle of nowhere. This is on a, I think it's 21,000 acre pecan ranch, something like that, some gigantic amount of thing, and they have a state-of-the-art recording studio where like the Yeah Yeah Yeahs, the Toadies, all kinds of people go out there and record, and you stay there, and they have these ladies that make you breakfast, and they make your bed, and they take care of your thing. These guys went out there and recorded this EP. It's absolutely great, man. They've got an amazing plays. They've got a tune on there, Money, Gimme Gimme, that's been played over 27,000 times on Spotify. I mean, they've got a lot of stuff going on. And if you live in Austin, they will be playing this Thursday, March 1st at Stubbs. So get out there and enjoy Culture Wars live. I believe I will be going to this show. I'm going to be running around on Thursday seeing some shows because I'm not playing with Skyrocket on Friday. All right? So enjoy my conversation with Alex Dugan and Mick Vredenburg from Culture Wars coming up in just a minute. Before we get to that, let me tell you how I'm doing. How am I doing? I'm doing all right. I'm hanging in there. I didn't play with Skyrocket this last weekend, which was kind of a double thing. I could have used the work. It would have been nice to have the distraction. A week ago today, my doggy mama and ex-girlfriend Sandy had to put down our dog Dylan. And that has been tremendously sad. I'm not going to lie. It weighs on me. I've cried every day. I don't know how long you do this. I miss him like crazy. His brother Taylor, our Doberman, has been terribly sad. I've never seen that. I've never seen a dog express so much emotion, so much sadness. So we've been doing stuff with him. Sandy's been taking him around where she goes. I take him where I go. This weekend, Sandy had a catering job out of town. And so I was off on Saturday night. So I stayed at Sandy's with Taylor. Didn't go out Saturday night. Just stayed in with my pup, chilling. We went and ran errands. We went and picked up some money I needed from Skyrocket, from Trish. And then, man, my friend Jamie Harris turned me on to Waco, the miniseries that's on the Paramount Network. I don't have a full cable package, but Sandy, my ex, does. So I watched 5 episodes of this Waco show that I guess ends on Wednesday. I'm looking forward to going to Sandy's maybe Wednesday and watching the finale, or maybe checking it out on Thursday on her on demand. But I highly recommend this Waco thing. If you were into the David Koresh Branch Davidian thing, it's all about it. It comes from two books. One was written by the guy on the inside. One book was written by the hostage negotiator, Greg Nosner or something like that. Anyway, I got that book. It's called Standoff, and it's basically his stories of being the hostage negotiator or being the FBI negotiator in some standoff situations, including the Branch Davidian compound in Waco in 1993, and also Ruby Ridge, that famous thing. Anyway, so I spent some time with Taylor, had a great time. Sunday, I got to play a show. My friend Sydney Wright is finishing up her Indiegogo campaign, or whatever her, I can't remember right now off the top of my head what her crowdfunding campaign is. But Sydney Wright, you heard her on the show a few weeks ago. I got to go out there and play a show with Eric Tesmer, Kalu James, Fear City Fire. Who else? Jane Ellen Bryant stopped by, played a few songs. Danny Malone played a few songs. It was really great, man. It was fantastic. Also, Sydney played. She's amazing. Her sister got up and sang a Mary J. Blige song with her. I had a great time. People were in their pajamas. People were in their pajamas. Yeah, there were some sexy pajamas. I'm not going to lie. There was some sexy pajamas, and there were some pretty freaky pajamas. There were some very, I saw a pair of sad slippers, somebody that had slippers for way too long, and they were like the kind that are discolored on the inside, but like from funk, not from like fade. It's like funk thickness on it that is just, I'm sure, loaded with bacteria, and they smell terrible. Anyway, had a great time playing Sydney Wright's thing. It was over at Lux here on West 6th Street, a place I don't normally go. I don't hang out on West 6th Street. Not that there's anything wrong with that. That's just not my scene. Anyway, I had a great weekend. I had a great time playing. Had a great time. Thank you, Sydney Wright, for having me. And thank you, all the artists, for playing. It was great to see short sets from everyone. It was fun to play a short set. In fact, when I got up there to play solo acoustic, I realized it was a loud room and it might not translate. So I asked the drummer from Fair City Fire, this guy Joe. I was like, hey, do you mind hanging out here and just jamming with me? So we did that. It was like a White Stripes kind of thing. And then me and Sydney sang a Tom Petty song at the end, and it was very nice. Had a great time. Ultimately had a great weekend with my dog Taylor and then hanging out socially with people. That's right. It's Monday night, and I'm actually on my way out the door to go see my friend Avery Moore, comedian who's been on the show, and the great Martha Kelly from Television's Baskets. And also she was the elevator operator in Spider-Man. The Spider-Man that came out this summer. Anyway, I'm looking forward to seeing some comedy, looking forward to laughing, letting go of some sadness for an hour or an hour and a half or something. I hope that you guys all have a great week, whatever it is you're doing. My friends Alex and Mick from the band Culture Wars are my guests today. Their self-titled EP is out, and you can see them if you live in Austin this Thursday, March 1st at Stubbs. All right, we have a fantastic conversation. They're really nice guys, and they're a great fucking band. Get out there. Check out their tunes, check out this EP, stream it, buy it, however you do music, and enjoy my conversation with Alex and Mick from the band Culture Wars. Let's get down. From Jack Donaghy.
Yeah.
That's where I got all my knowledge from.
I finally forgot like everything that happened, and I got to rewatch like all however many 6-7 seasons at once. It was nice. I like to do that, like forget everything that happens and then rewatch the whole show.
Yeah.
And you remember some of it, but you can't remember all the jokes.
No.
So it's nice. It's
especially that show is like, and you know, you can watch those episodes over and over again and totally see a new show every time.
Yeah, I have like a little loop of those shows that I'll watch in circular, and by the time I'm done with one, I'll forget the other one, and then just keep kind of going. And then I'll watch something new.
That's weird. I do that too. I just did that with Silicon Valley.
Yeah. Mm. I guess I could probably rewatch that now.
Yeah, that's my favorite show, man.
Yeah. It's a good show.
That
I
show
recently started
would be
watching. It's funny. Really funny.
I'm a huge TJ Miller fan. I just think that guy, I mean, he's gone from the show now.
Right. But I think that's kind of it for the show, but
you think so?
They'll do another season.
Yeah,
that's from what I read.
The whole Ehrlich Bachman, just like,
yeah,
abiato.
Yeah,
that whole thing, it's just amazing. So, man, you guys worked with some fucking dudes on this, man. You worked with like some of the cats, like the Smashing Pumpkins, Kanye West people. Like I saw Alan Mulder and I was like, what are they just comparing their thing to Alan Mulder? And I'm like, no, oh shit, he did it. I was like, whoa, damn, man. Did you get to meet those guys? Did you? Was it ascended to the dude?
Well, Alan's in the UK, so I only got to talk to him on the phone for like an hour. I'll take it.
How was that?
It was cool. I mean, it's one of those things where you kind of really admire somebody, and then it's like, here, be on the phone with them for an hour and don't say something stupid. So that's always fun.
How did you do? Did you say how much stupid stuff? What did you say?
I think I kept it to a minimum. We were just kind of going through like notes on money, and we decided just for time's sake that since I couldn't be in the room with him at the same time, that we would just kind of like talk on the phone, and then he could actually, there was a weird like it's almost like a podcast live thing where I'd be able to listen to what was going on in the room as like a live stream, and then we would kind of go through.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it was. I don't know why I hadn't thought of that before, or anybody, but it was pretty easy. So it was almost like we were kind of in the room. I just didn't get to look him in his face.
What aspect of his work attracted you to him?
I think you know, with him and Manny both, we just kind of, it was one of those you don't know until you ask type of situations, and we got pretty lucky that they were willing to like the music and put the time in. I think for us with money, which is what Alan did, I think at that point we were kind of like, well, what does this kind of remind us of? What influences, you know, does this kind of come from? And I think, you know, Arctic Monkeys and Nine Inch Nails kind of, and stuff like that. And it was like, well, who did that? And it was Alan. I was like, well, let's just ask him and see what he says, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
and then we got lucky. And so that was just kind of what we thought, you know, it's just like, well, who does what we love? And let's just see if they say something. If they never respond, then okay, we move on.
You know? What about Manny? How did you?
Manny.
Did you just reach out to Alan?
Like yeah, like, well, our like Facebook. Our previous manager did, okay. And same thing with Manny. He had worked with Manny before, not with Alan, so okay. That there was a little bit of an existing relationship there, so that made it a little bit easier. But it was kind of a, you know, just check out the tracks and see, you know, what you think, and if you want to fill in some time and see, you know, if you want to take something new on, you know. With Manny, it was kind of tough, like, and Alan, too, really, with either of them asking them for, like, a deadline.
Yeah,
because they're like, oh, I've got the new like whatever, you know, big top 40 record, and we're like, yeah, we really need this one song for this local Austin band. Please hurry.
Sorry, know? Imagine Dragons needs their single mix before it goes to radio.
Yeah.
So, you guys recorded. What's the guy's name that produced it? Hold on. Robert Sewell.
Yeah.
Now, is he a guy that's out at Sonic Ranch or?
No, he's from here. Actually, Mick, I met him through Mick.
Yeah, Rob used to work at Orb Studios. Uh-huh. He was their head engineer.
That's how I know him. Okay.
Yeah.
I've worked with them,
and I kind of got to know him through a one off like a random session that I did with an artist he was working with, and I played cello too.
Mm-hmm.
So I went and did some strings on the album. It was for actually a good friend of Rob's and my, Casey Luong. Okay. And she's a songwriter. I think she's still based in Austin. And this was like a long time ago, maybe like 5 or 6 years ago. So, and that was the first time I met Rob. And I feel like ever since then, I've just like seen him, you know, almost on a weekly basis working with him. So it's been cool. Kind of cool. So
we get called in for all sorts of cello.
Yeah. That's how I kind of it's a good way to get to know a bunch of producers and engineers in town is to do session stuff, you know. So
yeah.
But I didn't know at the time that there was a little bit of a gap there, and then kind of we were looking for a place to record, and then we went to Orb and I got to see Rob again. I kind of knew. I was like, well, this is a really cool spot, and I thought the engineer there was really, really good. So
yeah,
and it just kind of was a natural thing to continue working with him with this. This was with the previous band that we did that album with.
Yeah,
and
what was that called?
It was called The Vanity. It was our. That's pretty much how me and Mick met.
Yeah,
okay. We were trying to. I was trying to start this other band, and we had a guitar player drop out, and then you know we were trying to find somebody, and then Mick walks in the room, and I think you know that was once we met each other. That's when that band started to like. start forming itself, but in the process, I think me and Mick got to know each other a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
We eventually started a writing process external to the band, and that's basically what happened. We were just kind of bored. we were actually doing pretty well. We were touring and doing some fun stuff, but I think just musically, me and him were just wanted to kind of, there was this other side of us that we just really wanted to get out, and we just felt like we couldn't do that, and so we started doing it on the side, just as a supplementary thing. It was supposed to be like, let's bring more material to the table, and it ended up being kind of met in a different way, I'll say lightly. But basically at that point, you know, Mick and David and I just decided, you know, we wanted to branch off and make this the thing and start something totally different. And that's kind of how we started. But with Rob, he was, you know, the engineer, and I would say at certain points producing, and I think he would too, some of the old Vanity tracks as well. So he just slowly, like, we got closer and became friends, and that kind of thing just built up, and we, you know, built a pretty trusting relationship, and he kind of broke us out of our box. And then once the gig was up with the old band, which was, I guess, the point, then we really started breaking out of that box. And discovering really what we should be and who we wanted to be. And we spent about a year and a half figuring that out before we said anything to anybody about the old band. For everyone just thought like the old band was still existing. And we were like, we had already, that would have been over for a year and a half by the time we told people. And then we announced this whole new thing, and we had all the stuff ready to go. And that was kind of a weird transition, but.
Wow. So you guys, you're doing South by Southwest?
Yeah, we're doing a couple things.
What are you doing, do you know?
I know a couple of them. I know we're doing like our official thing. It's like Friday at 1 in the morning or something at the top of the Hilton Garden Inn.
I had a Saturday at 1 in the morning once. Like, you know, the last
possible. You, last, you know, we jokingly were trying to figure out, and I still haven't gotten the exact answer, is it Friday at 1 a.m. or is it Saturday. Technically Saturday?
They would say that it's, well, to not confuse stupid people like me, right, they'd have to say Friday, but technically it is Saturday at 1 a.m.
Right, yeah. So that's okay. What I asked them. I was like, do we show up Friday? Do we show up, we show up Thursday? You know,
I think I brought that up of our text group message. Yeah. I was, you know, always very excited to play South by, but then, you know, we had a similar time slot last year, and then I kind of forgot what. How we eventually figured it out. I couldn't remember which one was which, and I was like, so what day is it actually? You know,
do you know where you're doing it?
It's called 18th over Austin.
It's one of those things that you don't know what it is until South by all of a sudden.
It's like literally
the most happening place you've ever seen.
It's like a big restaurant on the roof of the Hilton Garden Inn, basically.
Oh, that's
almost
cool.
It's almost like a convention space type of thing, and they're just going to set up a stage in there like they do for all the South by stuff. But it's basically it's not outdoor roof, it's an indoor roof, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
From what I've seen on the, I've had to Google it, but we're doing that, and then I basically got bored and decided to put together a benefit kind of show that we're doing at the parish on Thursday the 15th.
Oh yeah.
We're calling it Locals Only. And it's we've got, you know, Austin Eastsiders on board, and we've got the proceeds going to Ham and stuff like that. So it's going to be like kind of a fun thing. We've got I ended up booking the whole thing myself. We've got Mobley, Maylot, Curtis Rush from Briley Social Hour.
I literally when you were coming up,
yeah.
I was reading an email from Maylot's guy.
Oh, cool. Yeah. So that
he's coming in a week or something.
Yeah. Cool. I mean, they're really awesome. And our one of our engineers from our record is in that band.
Oh, cool.
So it's kind of a nice little cross-pollination. And then we've got ourselves and the Lagoons and our buddies from California come in as well. So we've got like a whole, you know, 5-6 hour block of music, and we're going to
killer, man.
Get some and sponsors it's at night? Involved. No, it's in the daytime.
It's in the day? Oh,
yeah,
cool.
Yeah,
cool,
so it's just a day party. There should be a bunch
people
of
people can get in.
Yeah, it's free. I mean, it's at the parish. It's free. No badges, no nothing. Lots of...
I'll go to that.
Yeah. Please come. Lots of free Eastsiders and...
I don't think I get... I get to do sometimes, like, podcast shit there.
Yeah. Well, if you want to come... We got nothing like that going on if you want to...
What do you mean?
Like, you want to do something, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was just... I meant, like, normally, like, they... Like, last year, Tune In had a podcast stage in a hotel, and I got a badge for it.
Oh, okay, yeah,
and then
yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, totally.
But anyway.
No, this thing is free. We just kind of, I wanted to obviously like have a good chance for us to, you know, play a pretty good showcase and turn it turned into this whole like, well, why don't we just invite a bunch of our friends and bring in charity and make it a good time and get some free liquor and have a good time, you know, have fun with it.
Oh yeah, I can get into that.
Yeah.
Charity, liquor.
Yeah.
Yeah. sorry, that was creepy the way I was like, yeah. let me ask you this. So you guys, you have a publicist you work with, Jillian, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, she's nice.
Yeah.
I've emailed with her.
Yeah.
That's how we came into each other's lives. That's weird. Sorry. She didn't tell you I'm not very good at this? Oh. Damn, man.
She That's warned weird. Us. No,
usually the publicists say like, why are you going to go to this guy's apartment? It's weird. But you've got a publicist. When you're going to South by South, you had a record that you... When did that record come out? In 2017, but what
era? It was August.
August, okay.
Yeah. So, but the single was April.
April.
Yeah.
And you've made videos for the thing. They're all... They're really great videos.
I appreciate it. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, me and Jeremy, I decided, you know, we linked up with Jeremy Mattern, who was the director. I mean, me and him co-directed the Money video, but then I was like, go for it with the rest of them. He really took the ball and ran with it, and it was really cool. But, you know, I was like, man, I got to use my film school degree for something.
And, is that what you got? That's what you're dealing with?
From UT.
Okay. Okay, well, we'll get to that in just a second. But what I was going to say is when you're going to do this South by Southwest, what do you want to take away from it?
Yeah, I mean, I have a pretty specific opinion on South by and stuff like that, but I would say that for us right now, we're going to radio with we've got a radio promo team and stuff, and they're going for that nationally, and we're about in week three. We're in rotation in Columbus and Knoxville, Tennessee. We were on in St. Louis and San Diego yesterday, Miami, Atlanta, stuff like that.
So Miami?
Yeah. The Shark station. It's like 106.5. I'm guessing the number is the Shark. It's the alt station.
That's cool, man.
Yeah. Well, my mom's side of the family is all from there, so that was kind of... Really? I got to tell all of them.
Are you Cuban?
My grandfather. Yeah.
I'm Cuban.
Awesome.
Yeah. And I graduated from Miami Beach Senior High School.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Awesome.
Well, next, by the way, my mom's a big Skyrocket fan, so next time you're in Houston, I'll get you guys to meet, because she's from Miami. You guys can talk all about it, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. I didn't realize she was a – that's a fun – people's moms are fans. It really is that kind of band. So basically, like, when you're going to take away
– Right, yeah. So the for us with the radio stuff, I mean, our best thing is – what I would say the best thing about South By is every radio programmer pretty much in the country is in one place at one time. And that's the biggest opportunity, because normally it's like you're trying to get these guys' attention and you want to play in front of them. So the expensive way to do it is let's go play in all these markets and play to 10 people a night, but one of those 10 people will be the program director. And if we're lucky, he likes it and he'll put us on. That's the expensive way to do it. The cool thing about South By is everyone
comes to your town.
And hopefully is drunk and will still remember. But, you know, everyone's there, so it's the best way to really reach all those people. So I think that's the best way to do it, and I think that's what South By is very good for.
Yeah.
Also from a press angle. But if I was a band that was trying to get discovered and I didn't live in Austin, I would save my money.
Yeah.
I've got a buddy who I love dearly, and I've told him this, so this is not a surprise. But, you know, he lives in L.A., and he wants to come to South By every year. And I'm like who are you going to see that's not in L.A.?
Unless it's already happening.
Well, right.
Unless and the ball's already rolling.
But that's the thing, is the ball has to already be rolling at this stage of South By for it to matter.
At this stage. At this stage, there has to be an A&R guy going, I'm going to see this band. That's one of the things that's on my list that I'm doing next month. So you know
otherwise,
what you're
doing. It's like, you know. If you already live here, great, you know, fantastic. But I wouldn't fly from Japan or something. Like, I know there's some stuff like that.
Man, whenever you're like in like the parking lot of like the Kebabalicious truck, and there's like some band that came here from Sweden and like saved all this money, and you're just like, oh, bro, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
it's like 1:30 p.m. in the afternoon.
Yeah, I've always wondered about that too. I think it's really cool and really interesting to have all these musicians from all over the world come here, and for that, that's a very special thing.
If they break even, then great. But if they're not breaking even,
and you never know. You know, like I probably wouldn't. I'd probably be be a little more cynical about if I was living somewhere else, like really far away. But yeah, for us, it's just another great opportunity to play in front of folks, and there's already going to be a lot of people running around, and we're at a point right now where we just like to play really as many shows as we can, and just and try to reach people and let everyone have a good time and see if they like it, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Hey Mick, can I ask you a question? Yeah. Do you act?
No, I don't.
Too bad. You should take some acting lessons, because when I write my biopic about Bob Schneider, I would love to cast you as
Wow.
Enough. I mean, that's a nice compliment.
We'll have to ask Bob first.
Ladies like
yeah.
him.
Like him. Is it because I'm really beardy right now, or is it,
you just have a very, like, if I saw you, because I need glasses to see up close, and I need glasses to see far away, so if I saw you from across the parking lot, I'd be like, dude! And then you wouldn't turn around, and it wouldn't be Bob.
I'd happily do it. That's we can set up. I met Bob one time, like one on one at recording studios.
That can be weird.
Yeah, it was really interesting. He was cool. Yeah.
He was.
Okay. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Because he's admittedly a tough, like, first meeting.
I think I remember that there was some. We both said some, because I'm a pretty awkward, strange person too.
And so oh, I good. Just, like, so I'm, you guys I'm not saying probably he is, just but... hit it off. No, yeah. He is an awkward, strange person, admittedly.
Yeah.
On this show.
Yeah. So yeah. I kind of felt like a connection when he probably doesn't remember at all, but it was funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So where are you from?
Originally I just say El Paso, because that's where I grew up and went to high school, and that's where my mom and her side of the family is from, and my dad lived there. They got divorced when I was little, but he lived there too when I was growing up, but he often lived elsewhere, like Houston and Southern California, San Diego a lot too, and so I know all these like beach places really well, in addition to growing up in the middle of the desert. So
yeah what's that like growing up in El Paso? That's weird.
It was cool, man. It was actually a really nice place to grow up. It's like real quiet. If you like if you go into the airport in El Paso, if you fly in, I don't know if they still do this, but the mayor used to like have a message on the PA system saying like El Paso is the safest city in America or something like that, like ranked that way, and which is ironic because it's next to one of the most dangerous cities in the world. But so for me, it was it's really crazy. It was like a real kind of like fun, sleepy place to grow up, like, you know, real close to the Rio Grande. And
yeah, do you, as a teenager, do you cross the border and party and do weird shit? Like
you used to be able to. Yeah. my year in high school was probably the first. We were like the first class that probably stopped doing that, because some sketchy shit started, you know,
right, people getting kidnapped and killed.
Yeah. And but my mom, like, she grew up there in the 70s. Like, that was just a regular thing for her, you know. And even up to like the few classes before me, that was a regular thing. Everyone would go have, you know, get drunk on tequila for the first time in Juarez when they're a teenager, you know. And yeah, but unfortunately, it's not the case anymore. Maybe soon they can start, you know, in a few years. Hopefully, who knows?
Yeah,
they can clean it up a little bit. But it's a crazy place.
Did you know about Sonic Ranch when you were out there?
I did, actually. Speaking of my mom,
see, Tony, does he still drive a Viper?
Ooh,
he used to drive a Viper.
He doesn't. He didn't have it in front of the house or anything, but I wouldn't be surprised. my mom, so he and my mom were really close growing up, actually.
Oh, really?
Best friends.
Oh,
yeah,
that's cool. He's such a great guy.
He's an amazing person. She talks about him always having like Lambos and Ferraris, the crazy, you know, all these amazing supercars, and always getting plenty of tickets on that drive from El Paso to Tornillo, because it's about normally like a 45-50 minute drive if you're driving like a normal person, but if you're driving the Lambo, I think you could cut it down to like 20 minutes. Yeah,
I was looking to stay to record out there with my band, and we went out there and did a show, and then he came out to the show, and it's like, well, you guys want to come out, you know?
Yeah.
Cool.
So we're like, yeah. And he took our drummer in the Viper, and like when we got there, our drummer was just like, dude, I was gonna fucking die. Like, he's like, I've never gone that fast in my life.
Yeah. I've only been in the car with Tony like around the around the ranch. So.
Yeah, that's I've taken the
because he likes to give a little tour, which is a lot of fun to. And he has all these different little studios popping up now and different little houses. It's amazing.
That's what I've heard. I mean, I haven't been there in a long time.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the largest residential recording studio in the United States at this point, and so he's keeps expanding it, and basically, you know, he's got the pecan farm around it. And he just keeps funneling it into the studio and doing really great stuff. And he does a really, really great job, especially last time we were there, which was a couple months ago, of making everything kind of really unique. And maybe it's just because he likes us because of his mom or something. I don't know. But he really gives us, like, you know, a lot of special attention and drags in all these old vintage guitars. You got to play this. You know,
he's a super thoughtful
studio owner. I feel like he's a like guy. He's kind of,
yeah.
I mean.
Yeah.
He's
just having fun.
There is that sort of like you do feel like. Like he genuinely likes you,
right?
That's a good feeling.
Yeah,
I think he does. He's like a genuine dude.
No, yeah, really nice.
Yeah, he's always really interested in like the artists that are being there. Of course, he has a lot of really amazing artists come in there, high profile people, and but other he didn't really know who we were right away. He knew who I was just because he knows my mom, but then so he went in there and he was, you know, real curious. And so he always stops by and listens for a little bit, and
that's cool.
Yeah,
and I'm not obviously not from El Paso, but I love it there for all sorts of different reasons. But the fact that like it happened to be the case, but we found out that the first time we went there, the studio that we were in was like the house that everyone would like party in the 70s, and so like including like Tony and his mom and stuff like that, like they'd all have that's where the parties would be. So every time I'm like, man, we got to be in that room because that's where like that's where the energy vibe is. So it's really like fun to be like 40 years later in that room like recording.
It's
nutty. But
because he grew up there, right? That's his family's ranch.
Yeah.
You know, I ran into him randomly on the street during South by Southwest like 10 years ago, and I was like with a bunch of my cousins and shit, and I was like, he's like, well, what are you guys doing? And I was like, I'm just walking around, like getting drunk and watching shows. And he's like, I'll come with you. And like from like 4 p.m. until, you know, 3 a.m, we were just like, Tony was part of our crew. It was awesome.
That's awesome. I would love to do that with Tony. That'd be fun.
Yeah. But, I had one of my cousins kept calling him Doc. I was like,
stop doing it, dude. He just smiled and like not say anything. Probably
just like he was like that. He's just a nice guy.
Yeah.
So what brought you to Austin, man?
School, actually.
UT.
Yeah, I went to UT for undergrad and graduate degrees.
Oh, cool. So, what were your degrees, undergraduate?
They're both in music, so in cello performance is officially what it's called, I guess. So I just have
Doctor
a BM
of music?
Degree.
He's got a master's.
So. Yeah, I'm not a doctor, just a master, I guess. It sounds pretty stupid to say that, but yeah. But it was a great experience. My teachers there were wonderful, and it was a great place to even though I primarily do different types of music now, like I'm in a rock band and stuff like that. I studied classical music while I was there. There was just a fundamental musical training like that was very, very, I feel real lucky to have that.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's cool. A great thing.
Thank you. Thank you. And it brought me to Austin, and I wouldn't have been involved in this project or in anything else that's, you know, dear to me without making that move. So
we met through a mutual friend of you teaching cello.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that really. And then we wouldn't have met Rob if you weren't playing cello for him. So, yeah.
Yeah, totally.
I'd say everything kind of revolves around the cello there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where are you from, Alex?
I'm from Houston. Originally.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Rocking.
Yeah. Grew up there pretty much the whole time. Did like 2 years in California, hated it. And then.
Where in Houston?
Let's see. So I grew up in Westview.
Okay. That's nice.
I went to high school in Bel Air. And then at a certain point, my dad lived in kind of Memorial Gallery area at different times, and my mom stayed in Westview. So I've been kind of all around the place. But yeah.
Yeah, that's a good place. Did you play music when you were there? Did you?
Yeah, I had a band in high school.
Played Fitzgeralds?
Yeah. It was a band called the Transco Empire, which was us.
That's cool. It's a very Houston name.
Yeah, it's very Houston.
It's cool as shit.
Yeah. And so I
mentioned my high school band name.
Yeah.
That's actually a non-embarrassing high school band name.
I thought it was okay. We thought of like 30 different things, and then I was just pissed off, and we were in the gallery area. I was looking at the tower, and I just kind of like an asshole went, Transco, and then my dad's building was called the Empire. So Transco Empire, fuck it. You know, and it was just kind of like, and they're like, okay, that's it. After like 2 hours, I'm like, okay, fine. You know, I did that. I did some musical theater as a small kid. So I used to
like Tuts or something.
I did Tuts. Yeah, yeah. I worked at the Alley Theater for 7 years doing Christmas Carol.
Wow.
As a kid from 6 to 13 years age, and I was Tiny Tim for about half of them, and then something else for the other half.
You've got the acting chops probably to play Bob.
Yeah,
but you've got the thing.
Maybe we can.
I'll just whisper.
Sarah Noda Bergeron.
Yeah, who's that? Andy Serkis, is that the guy who does plays like Gollum and stuff like that?
Oh yeah.
Maybe we could like map your body movements.
Just CGI. Yeah. Or I'll just stand behind you.
So that's an interesting sort of thing. There's not a lot. You don't. You know how like theater people when they play rock, it's weird.
Yeah.
They smile too much.
Well, once once I got into high school, I actually got into high school for theater. But once I got in,
you got for HSPBA?
That, no, I went to Episcopal. Okay. My brother went to HSPBA.
Oh, did he?
But he's we're like 8-9 years apart. But once I got in there, mom's like, you know, you're not doing theater in high school. I'm like, okay. So then pretty much the rest of my high school was figuring out how to like come up with a cool way to get away with it kind of thing.
Why was your mom like, you're not doing theater in high school?
Well,
she didn't want to drive you everywhere or something?
No, no. It was just kind of, it wasn't even like a forceful thing. It's like, you don't want to do theater in high school. Like, come on, you want to go through high school and do other things and explore. You've been doing this for like 7 years kind of thing. And I was like, I don't know. And at the same time, like, I didn't really like any of the productions they were doing. If they had done something that I really liked, I would have done it. But they were doing, I think, I mean, I was 15, 16, they were doing Urinetown. I was just like, I'm not doing Urinetown. It just sounds like a play about people wanting to piss everywhere. I mean, and that is what it is. And I'm sure it's great, and it's won Tonys and stuff. But I just didn't want to do it because I came off of doing, you know, Charles Dickens. And even in middle school, we were doing Guys and Dolls and stuff like that, you know. So the kind of Sinatra
thing. You like the
thing.
Traditional...
Yeah,
theater.
You know, or at least something with a character that I feel like I could kind of fill in like a, you know, a good way kind of deal. But from there, I just there ended up being a really great film program at my high school, and it was the only one that I've ever really heard of.
I've never heard of that film program in high school.
Yeah,
cool.
It was very odd, but it just kind of, you know, it was one of those things like basically once every quarter, this group of like 8 or 10 selected people. There was classes you could take, but at the end of it, usually your junior, senior year, 8 or 10 people get selected, and you'd make a 15-minute thing that would get shown to the whole school. So it was kind of a big deal, and I was like, okay, cool. Later, the whole thing got censored when they changed principals, and it became not in front of the whole school anymore, but that's the whole different thing. But from there, it was that, and I was like, well, I love the creative part. I'm writing a lot. I'm having a lot of fun with this, but I still miss singing. So I tried to think of the coolest way I could get away with it, and it was being in a band. And so from there, I started the high school band, and then I moved to LA trying to start something else. Mainly, I was in film school at the time because that was why I was going.
Did you go to USC or UCLA?
No, well, I did. Actually, did this is funny. I took graduate school classes in the summer during high school at USC in their film school.
That's interesting.
It was like a summer film program thing that they would take like certain people. It's I think like 30 kids. Or something.
What aspect of film were you attracted to the most? The writing.
The writing, once I got involved in production, it was way too slow for me. And then the payoff of it is, you know, not watching, either painfully watching people watch it or not seeing anyone enjoy it ever afterwards. So I think the parts of soccer that I like a lot and the parts of bands that I like a lot is that, you know, having feedback in front of you, whether it's positive or good, but it's pretty instant. Mm-hmm. I think I like that the most. But... You know, just from there, I did that, and then I was a screenwriting major at Loyola Marymount for 2 years, and I liked it. But in the process of that, they had a music business class that I shouldn't have even gotten into because it was you had to be a sophomore or a junior. I can't remember. Basically, I was too young to be in it, and my advisor was like, you know what, I'm going to put you in there anyway. And the teacher was this guy John Hartman, who his brother is or was Phil Hartman. And he also managed a lot of different acts and worked for David Geffen at different times. And
yeah, so Phil was oddly involved in music. Like, he did, like, album covers and shit like that. Like, all this weird shit. Like, famous album covers.
I don't know. I mean,
no,
I,
he did. He was, I can't remember, because his brother worked with bands.
So John had, you know, Poco in America.
Right,
and
he did
stuff
a Poco
like
album.
Right, okay. So they were all kind of intertwined that way. They brought Glenn Frey into our class one time to speak for an hour and a half, and it's like 30 people in the class. It was just like weird. And then
What'd you get from that?
You know, I mean, specifically, I don't remember, honestly.
This is pretty hard because the whole time you're like, fuck, that's Glenn Frey.
Yeah, you're just kind of going like, you know, he pulled up in his Bentley or something, to the campus and just walked out, you know, swinging. But it was a really cool thing. And, you know, he talked all about like just what he thought. And I mean, I think his main focus has always been writing. And so that was kind of the thing is, you know, write, get better and better and better.
That's a huge thing.
And that is a huge thing.
There's a lot of people that I heard this great quote from Neil Young that was, they were like, so is it, you know, do you like pound it out when you're writing or is it inspiration? And he goes, well, it's totally inspiration, but inspiration only really comes when you're sitting down writing a song. Yeah.
Yeah. So I love talking about this stuff, by the way. I find it fascinating, like the psychology of creative people, especially any type of songwriter or, you know, writing a novel, anything like that. How does it happen? But yeah. Anyways, I didn't want to digress from the
topic, but you know, so we had that. We had like Tony Dimitriadis, the manager for Tom Petty, Billy Idol, stuff like that. So we had all sorts of people coming through. Different. Those are the two I remember the most.
Yeah, what a great. That's great.
Yeah, and from there, I was like, I told my teacher, I was like, look, I don't like it here in LA. I wanna play music, but I, you know, I need to leave. And he's like, all right, well, you got to meet my buddy Harlan when you go out to Austin. So that's kind of how my music career started. It was just kind of like, I'm going and I've made good friends with you, what do I do? And he said, go here. And that was what started me in Austin. Once I got into UT, actually I applied to UT as a music major, and then they told me that I had to audition in a classical basically it was all gonna be classical. I'm like, oh,
been there, done that.
Yeah, I was like, I don't, I mean, I love you, Mick, but I was like, I'm not doing that.
Like five times.
Yeah, and so me and my voice coach in at LMU at the time, we were trying to get away with it. So we were gonna do like Alabama Whiskey Song, which is technically The Doors, but it's originally from some German operatic whatever. And so we were like, well, maybe this is a way we can get away with it. And about halfway going through the prep for it, I was just like, you know, this probably won't work. And they're probably going to be like, this fucking smart ass, like, you know, coming in trying to do a Jim Morrison thing.
That would have been pretty funny.
Yeah, so I just didn't do it. And I changed it to film, and luckily I still got in. And, you know, so that I almost did it. So that was kind of my transition out of California. And then from there, it was just meeting as many people in Austin as possible, trying to find people I gelled with, and then finally running into him. But that was after 3 years or something.
Have you worked on any, do you work in production at all? Or do you?
If I can avoid it, yeah. No, I don't anymore. The only production I'll do anymore is with the music video stuff.
Okay.
So I'll go into treatment writing and all that kind of stuff with Jeremy and whoever else is working on the project. And, you know, so it comes in handy in some ways, but in other ways, I'm like really glad that I'm not doing anything with it at all, because it's a very slow process. And when we do it, I'm like, thank God I'm only doing this like 3-4 days out of the year to make music videos for my band, and not like waking up every morning and being there for 12 hours and then, you know, just sitting in a, you know, you spend 12 hours in a day filming something that'll probably end up being, you know, 5-6 minutes, and you do it every day. And it gets to the point where like, oh my, it's watching paint dry. And if you're the director or in a creative position, then obviously there's a lot more going on for you, but you know, it wasn't for me.
I listened to this podcast just the day before yesterday on Saturday when I was driving to San Antonio for a gig. And it was with the guy that wrote Go, and he's written a lot of movies since, Big Fish, Willy Wonka, all this kind of shit. But he was just talking about how, like, it's just brutal. Like, it's brutal. Like, when you, you know.
It's, yeah.
There's
it's
movies not... that he, like, you write the draft, someone takes it, other people get it, and because of some kind of, like, union thing, that guy, the first guy that wrote the thing, is always credited as the writer.
Right.
No matter if it's a completely different fucking thing when you see it, you know what I mean? So there's, he was even saying there's movies that have been made that were big that he wrote initially but wouldn't even go see because of what they did to it. He's never seen these movies even. Yeah, it seems like just the movie thing is just shit, man. It's hard.
It's unless tough.
You got the unless you're one of those guys like Paul Thomas Anderson who makes a movie that's so good that you get final cut and then you just kind of get to make your movies.
Well, that's,
you
know what I mean? Yeah, that's the exception of the rule. I mean, there's
it's only like three or four guys that get to do that.
Well, it's a high risk business. I mean, making a movie is really expensive, no matter what it is. Especially if you're going to do it right, and you know, you're taking a risk on a new writer, new director, anything like that. You're spending millions of dollars.
Yeah.
So you're expecting someone to just be like, "Hey, man, here's millions of dollars." Like, and we trust you implicitly. Like,
a new head of production comes in the studio and doesn't like your project. That's it.
It's right.
Like, whoa, okay.
Yeah. So there's a process of it, but it really takes like one slip up. Like, you can, you know, make something for $10 million, and then the next time they'll give you 25, and the next time they'll give you 100. But when they give you 150, you screw up, and they never give you anything again. You know, and it's just kind of one of those like weird. Obviously, there's people that, you know, trial and error will get better and better, but some people just stay at that level because that's just what it is.
You guys definitely took some risks. I mean, as far as like making a record, you went for it. You went to the real studio, worked with the real people,
right?
Doing the real deal.
Well, I mean, we'd had some practice, obviously, with that, you know, of how to do that process, and we both kind of come from music backgrounds in one way or another. Him more so than me, but you know, it's one of those things. Like, I always say that. The music business is a business, and you know, you have to treat it as such. As much as you want to be artsy and stuff like that, that is absolutely the art part of it is what makes it work. But if you want to just be artsy and you don't want to take part in the business, you are screwed, whether you like it or not. Nobody, especially now, no well-known person, A&R person that speaks the South by things, just going to walk in off the street having never heard anything about you and go, "This is fantastic. I'll give you $1 million." Like, it's just not going to happen. Yeah. And so there's just a level of like being real about it, you know, that you are running a business. And so, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that happens in Austin business wise and there's a lot of different things I could go on tangents about, but
I mean, Austin's not, it's funny because I was talking, my brother was in town from the Dominican Republic and these dudes from Miami and stuff, and they're like, "Man, you know, what's the deal? Live music capital, music on every corner and all this stuff." And I'm like, "Well, it's that kind of thing. It's kind of like a there is no industry here.
It's right? left for the most part.
I mean, as far as like the big world, I mean, in the 90s, people had offices here, like Arista and Mercury and stuff like that. But they left then too. And the thing is that Austin, like the way that our community works, the way that everyone's there, the Ham, the Sims, all that stuff is there and works because there is no big business.
Right. It's there out of necessity.
And the way that we can sort of like work out who we are and discover who we are as artists here under the radar, but still working all the time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's almost like when you're doing stand-up, like this area allows you to go and work out.
Sure.
Like get stage time and do, you know, get your thing together.
Yeah.
But there's a funny thing because I was just in this meeting. I'm in this, it just ended, but there's a thing here at Leaders in Austin Music, a Liam program. They get people from business, from music, all kinds of things. And you get invited to come and be a part of this thing for like 6 months and kind of learn these classes and business philosophies and ways to come back and enrich our own community, which is great.
Yeah.
There's no other city that does a fucking thing like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But there's this thing where people are like, "Oh yeah, we need to do this like living wage thing and all this stuff." And I'm always like, "Man, no, that's not the deal." Mm-hmm. Because I've like, why the fuck should some band of some yahoos that just started some shit-ass cover band, I'm just using that as an example to my band that's like made up of like fucking serious people that have had their own careers in their own right and have been doing this specific band now for like over 15 years. Why should that person make as much as we do when right. not that many people, you know what I mean?
Well, it's like, not, it's
to
not
me,
very,
it's very Darwinian. It's very, right. it's laid out. I mean,
yeah.
if a lot of people come to see you play, you will get a lot of more gigs, period.
1,000%.
If people aren't coming to see you play, it's not the club's fault. It's not the scene's fault. There's a lot of that that happens, though, in our community. There's right. a lot of like, well, that guy didn't, you know, they didn't even advertise the show. It's like, well, I mean, what about you?
Yeah.
Like, what's
yeah.
their fucking responsibility? You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Well, it's yeah. very, it's, I know it's not artsy to say, but it's a free market. It yeah. is. And your value of what you get paid is how many people you bring to the door. And if you play, I'm sorry, but if you play six shows a month in the same city and you do not build an audience, then you will not get paid. And that's just it.
But,
and,
but if you play, like, there's a lot of people here that believe that they should be able to make a living going to this place one night, going to this other place, they had, like, never leaving town.
Right,
it's like, you gotta still right. get out and do your fucking thing, man.
Right, right, but right. There's a level of the business that I think it would behoove people in Austin, or at least Austin musicians, to know about, which is just, like, the basics of you want to build an audience. If you play four times in a month and you want that audience to come out, that audience will be segmented and you will have half empty shows or a quarter or, you know, five people in the room.
Yeah.
And you're not only hurting yourself, but you're hurting the venue who are taking a shot on you and could be taking a shot on someone else. And so, you know, there's really just, you know, the reality is you should really more so, like, we play once every 2 months in Austin. That's kind of our thing.
That's enough.
But that's enough. And that's the reality is when we do that, like, we started and we did, you know, like, our first show in Austin, there's 30 people there. All right. And we got paid for 30 people. And that's how it should happen. And, you know, the next show we opened for this guy from the UK at Stubbs, and it was on a Monday night. We took it because it was a great opportunity, but we played for 20, 30
people.
Who was
it, you know?
Youngblood.
Okay.
And, you know, and but the next time we did it, we got, you know, everybody at C3 was nice enough to give us a Saturday, and we just did it. And all of a sudden, there was 140 people. Blew my mind. I was like, oh, cool. But we went, you know, 30, 30, 140. And I wouldn't expect, you know, but it's just.
That's
just,
great.
You space it out. You do your advertising. It's a business and it's
smart.
Marketing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's marketing.
And also there's another thing that a lot of people don't notice in themselves is you got to be good. And you got to have music that's good that people want
to
hear.
Absolutely. And you have to put in the work. Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean we.
And you guys really. I mean, you guys, you wrote great songs.
I appreciate it.
You obviously worked very hard on those songs.
Yeah,
you went and got them done in the very best, the highest level you possibly
yeah.
could.
Yeah,
you know.
Ooh, we yeah, appreciate it. We
got
spent
Kim Kardashian's husband's producer.
That's exactly what we said.
They still won't send me any free shoots.
We're in the cool kids. Club. No,
yeah, no, well, within that though, like, you know, we spent a year and a half writing five songs. I mean, we wrote, god, you know, 60 70 80, whatever, but we spent that before we played a show, before we put anything out, before we did anything, because no matter who it is, not everything you come up with is going to be fantastic. And it's just the reality. Like, we've probably done like 100 something whatever already, and we've got, you know, what I would assume is eventually going to be a new EP or a new something coming event, you know, maybe in August, or I don't know, but
yeah,
you know, we have a lot of songs to potentially choose from, but the ones that are great stand out. So, you know, it's just putting in that work and writing as much as we possibly can. Like, we write at least 3-4 times a week, if not more.
Good.
No matter what's going on, unless we're getting ready for a show when we just don't have time for it, but you just have to do that. You know,
but those guys like Ryan Adams and Bob Schneider, who believe that if you're going to go around and say you're a songwriter, then every day you need to get up and write a fucking song.
If not,
you're not a songwriter.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's kind of what we were talking about maybe a little while ago, too, like having that ethic. And
It's
true.
Grinding through a little bit, even when you're not necessarily inspired on a certain day or having a bad day. You know, it's that type of consistency and
the chances of you writing like the greatest song you've ever written after not writing a song for a year and just sitting down and like, boom, whoa, that was a thing. I mean, there's occasionally that should happen, but usually that happens when you're constantly working, and then it comes to you really.
Yeah, I think you mentioned that Neil Young quote. Yeah. I don't know this. I'm paraphrasing really badly here, but it was like a fishing analogy or something like that. And he said, you have to show up, and like that's the only way you're going to catch the fish, you know. Right. And you might not catch one for a long time, but you won't catch, you know. Or the amazing like Wayne Gretzky quote, right? So,
I can't remember.
Based on 100% of the shots, you don't, you know, right. Just like.
Well, and even like for us, like our best.
I already
stuff,
feel silly for saying that, but.
No, it was. Dang, go Wayne.
Yeah.
But, you know, the best stuff we've ever done has been on days where we didn't feel good. We felt like shit, or we had some shit going on, or we weren't, you know, it's like whatever. Like, I remember.
That's true. It's interesting to see that in hindsight.
Well, like Lies, for example, which is becoming the favorite of the last EP. I mean, you know, we wrote the majority of that on a day where both of us were not in good moods, and we channeled it into writing, and then we recorded it on days where we both had like little sleep going on. And
we've also thought that might have something to do with it too.
Well, yeah. Like, so we're just
you're so tired sometimes. People.
Only work when you're in a bad mood or very
and exhausted. Yeah. I don't know. Sleep, I mean, that goes against all of my intuition, but I think that when you're so tired, maybe, I have no idea if this actually happens, but like all the anxious and kind of counterproductive parts of your mind stream like shut off a little bit, and then all of a sudden you'd like. It just like shines through like whatever's supposed to happen artistically, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't know. I might be romanticizing it a little bit, but I felt like that's happened to me and him a couple of times, you know? So,
yeah.
But that saying, still get good sleep. It's good for you.
I think what it does really is it takes sometimes when you're not feeling well and you're tired, you're hungover, whatever the hell, you know, it takes the part of your brain that's like,
second guesses.
Yeah, things. It's like every yeah. like doubt you've had, you're too tired for it, and you're just like, I don't care.
Yeah.
And so, you know,
maybe because you're just going with the
going,
you know,
with the flow.
Sometimes they say like using the force is especially in music, you know, like guide your, you know, use your feelings.
Yeah.
It is about.
Are you guys
that.
Star Wars guys, or did I just totally just say a bunch of weird shit?
I probably him more than me. But
I love Star Wars.
Right.
Yeah.
Since,
Obi-Wan Kenobi
so.
Said that. Use your feelings.
I've tried to win a few competitions before. Like, I have them over the phone. So
yeah,
and I don't know. I feel like I should have won by now. Maybe they didn't get my submission or something. It's like you win like $20 for the best Chewbacca noise. So,
really?
Yeah.
You know, if you hung out with my band Skyrocket, if you could do the bit, like,
I'd love to. Yeah.
Because we need a Chewy. We don't have. We got everyone.
Really?
One guy basically does everyone, and the rest of us. Sometimes we have performed. We have performed a scene from where Luke wants to give up, and he doesn't want to go on with the Force from the first movie.
Yeah,
and he's like, "No, I'm sorry. It's from Return of the Jedi when Yoda's like, I can't teach him. He doesn't have patience, and he's like, he will learn patience, Yoda. Yeah. Like the ghost said, we reenact that scene, and my scene is. He'll learn patience, Yoda. That's my Guinness. And every member of the Beatles. So Culture Wars, you guys can go to culturewars.io. That is your website. Your self-titled EP is available now. You guys are playing Thursday, March 1st at Stubbs.
Right, yeah.
Big show. Who else is playing on that?
The Lagoons.
The Lagoons.
Our buddies, yeah.
Yeah.
It'll be fun. We just did a little So Far gig with them the other day.
Good.
So Far Sound. So we're getting chummy. It'll be a good time. And it's the next step. We're with Stubbs. We're going to keep pushing there, you know?
Yeah. Kristen Chiani. Did you talk to her?
With First Stubbs?
Yeah.
I deal with Jenna and Margaret most of the time. Yeah. But it's I like it there. It's a good room.
Oh yeah,
it's become our spot.
It frankly probably could get used more. Honestly, you know, it's such a great place.
It's a great venue,
but it really could get used more. You know, I like it a lot.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I love that place. I always have. Is there anything I'm missing? It's been great having you guys on.
I want
to thanks to
not.
Jillian for setting this up. I'm glad that I didn't know you guys.
Yeah, well,
yeah.
We're pretty
new. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you're new, but I mean, you know, you should hear stuff. Yeah. You know what I mean? So, like, I'm glad that I got to meet you guys and hear your stuff. I like you guys a lot, and I'm looking forward to seeing you.
Yeah, I appreciate
please come.
Thanks
hang.
For having us on. Yeah. That's a huge thing for us, especially in our first, you know, year and a half of being a group,
trying to get people to know us.
Yeah, yeah. I've been looking forward to being on this for a long time. I'm a fan
of
the podcast.
So, oh, thanks, man.
Yeah, yeah,
I love totally. Doing the show. Well,
yeah,
thank
yeah.
you.
I think I first saw the poster at Space, probably like up on the
That's
on the
right.
billboard, and I'm like, oh, I'm gonna check that out. I saw you have my friends Lowen on, and
Lowen.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm good friends. There's some of my best friends are in that band. So
oh, excellent.
But yeah,
So not that terrible Sarah person.
She's pretty cool, but she's a buddy of mine, and their guitar player Michael, her newest addition. He's one of my best friends. So
yeah, I love those. Yeah, this has been great. Thanks for listening to the show, though.
Yeah, thanks.
And everyone get out there and check out Culture Wars, culturewars.io, their self-titled EP available now, Thursday, March 1st. Stubbs. See you guys.
See ya.
Alex Dugan, Mick Vredenburg from the band Culture Wars. What a great conversation, man. That was a nice conversation to have with those guys. They're really talented, man. They're really good. I love that they're going for it. Love that they're recording out at Sonic Ranch. Love that they worked with Alan Mulder. The whole deal. Find them at culturewars.io. Pick up their self-titled EP, available everywhere where you stream and download music. Gang, you can see them if you live in Austin this Thursday, March 1st at Stubbs. They'll be playing with the Lagoons. Go to culturewars.io for all of your Culture Wars information. All right? Hey, when you're checking out culturewars.io, don't forget that you can subscribe to this podcast on the many apps available for podcasts, like Apple Podcast, iPhone Podcast, Android Podcast, Stitcher, TuneIn, Overcast, and of course, Spotify. All right? You will get a new show every Tuesday and every Friday. This Friday, we will be talking to the band The Cover Letter. So, subscribe. Follow and enjoy. How did I get here? All right, let's hear some more music from Culture Wars from their self-titled EP. This is the song Bones. Have a great week, whatever it is you're doing. Let's get down.